Consequence Podcast Network.
This episode brought to you by the following patrons: Tristam, Kate, Isaac, Mats, Ori, Matthew, Karoon, Eddie, and Nick B. Thank you guys so much for helping keep the show going. If you want to hear their continued saga of the Patreonicals, stay tuned after the show. This episode brought to you by Chris. And Chris does want everyone to know that you are loved and you are supported, but it was just also Chris's birthday this last September 4th. So last Friday was Chris's
birthday. I was
going to
say, do you mean 2019 or a week ago?
No, just a week ago. Yeah, we didn't miss it by a week and a few days. We only missed it by a few days. So we just wanted to say a very big happy birthday to Chris, who was a big, big part of our Facebook community.
Chris, happy birthday. It's nice that you are the heart of our Facebook community.
Absolutely.
Theme music, you son of a bitch.
The Har version is like the Dylan of the Virgin family, and this is like the Arnold Schwarzenegger.
What? The horror virgin is the Dylan of the Virgin family, and this is the Arnold Schwarzenegger, and we're on the horror virgin right now. I don't think you realize how insane what you just said was.
Thanks for listening to Horror Virgin. I'm Paige.
I'm Mikey.
And I'm your horror virgin, Todd, which means I don't like watching scary movies, but you guys make me watch them, and this week, you guys made me watch The Predator.
No, not The Predator, Todd. Predator.
Sorry,
the Predator,
excuse me.
Just came out 2 years ago.
You're right.
The Predator is his father.
Excuse me. The 1987 Predator.
Predator.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that both of you guys have seen this movie before.
Absolutely. And real quick before I jump into it, because we didn't get a chance to do it last week because we'd already recorded that episode. Thank you everyone in the Facebook group for being so incredibly nice.
Oh, yeah.
And for those of you who have implied that I killed Jen Highlander style to take her place on the podcast, quit snitching, motherfuckers.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
I had seen this movie before. I had seen this movie many times, but it had been a long, long time. I watched this as a child with my father.
Oh, that's awesome, actually. Like, that is the perfect way to watch this rated R movie.
Yeah. Double feature with Terminator. There you go.
Oh, yes. I mean, no joke. That's a great way to watch it. So what did you think when you first saw it, Paige? Other than my dad should not let me be watching this movie.
Well, see, so here's the thing. I was a weird kid.
No.
My dad showed me Star Wars when I was like 7, and I was instantly obsessed with it. And he was like, well, if you like more space stuff, how about Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan? Don't think about Star Trek I. We're going right into Wrath of Khan.
You can't show a child Star Trek I. My gosh, that movie is boring.
Yeah. So, and I think that was his thinking as well. And so he showed it to me and my sister, who's 2 years younger than me. And she had straight nightmares for weeks because of the thing crawling into the clay ear. Like, it's clearly a fake ear, but she was like, they're going to put things in my ear. And I, on the other hand, was just like, cool.
Nice.
And he was like, ah, this is the weird one. And so I want to say that the first time I saw Aliens was like a year or two later.
Oh, yeah?
And then this was not far after.
So, Mikey, you've seen this movie before, too, right?
That would be an understatement.
Mikey, you've experienced this movie before, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of like Paige, where, like, thinking back now, I'm sure my parents thought I was like a weird kid, because, like, I mean, I played sports and stuff, but like when I was chilling out at home, I would be like playing G.I. Joes or Legos or whatever, and what was on TV would be like TNT or TBS with like these kind of movies on from like all day.
Sure.
So I would watch Predator like all the time, and I was like, okay, so this is what like a guy is. This is what, like, a man. This is what I'm supposed to be like when I grow up.
Oh, I'm supposed to be like Jesse the Body Ventura, governor of Mississippi.
Yeah, there are two different governors in this movie.
Wait, who's the other? Oh, Arnold.
Your former governor, Paige.
The Predator started a political cabal.
I forgot for a while that California was just like, yeah, the Terminator could be governor. We'll make shirts that say governator on it. And I have one. in my dresser. To this day, I have a Governator shirt.
Oh, they don't make movies like this. This here's the problem with America today. They don't make good action movies anymore.
Okay, so you're saying that there are many problems in America, but one of them is that we don't make great action movies anymore.
I'm saying that because we don't make great action movies and we don't funnel testosterone that way, all of the other problems are caused by it.
Oh, that's an interesting hot take that you just had right there.
Here's what I will argue, I guess. I feel like my dad loves these kind of movies, but is also a very sensitive, caring man.
Yeah.
So I think there's room for this type of a movie and the overblown idea of stereotypic masculinity.
Yeah.
While also being in touch with your feelings and showing your 10-year-old Total Recall.
All three boobs.
All three.
I think Mikey is probably one of the most sensitive men that I know. So yeah, I mean, that sort of checks out.
Obviously, you're not supposed to be like these guys, but it's really fun to like live this story with them.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is. It's just like so fun. It's just so fun. And they don't make fun action movies anymore that are like good.
So this is the first time I had seen this movie. It was an insane experience.
I believe that.
I wish I could be you, Todd.
Mikey, I know. I know you do. It's awesome.
Oh, God. No. Just the movie part.
But there's so much I love about this movie, and there are so many pop culture things that I did not realize came from this movie. Like the meme of Arnold Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers, like, air high-fiving or whatever. I didn't realize that was from this movie. And
it's just a screenshot.
It is, but they linger on it for, like, a good 25 seconds.
Yes.
Well, they have a contest. We'll get it there.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get there. But there's just so much of that I did not realize was from this movie. So it was sort of like, I recognize that. It was like that all the way through this movie.
Plus the get to the chopper.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
He says that like 90 times.
He does indeed.
I love this movie. It was insane. It was fun. I don't think it's a great movie, but I would watch this movie a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
So I see we're going to have this kind of podcast where we fight.
I'm just saying it's like no Dead Poets Society, Mikey, but it's a great movie.
The people are like you are why we don't have action movies anymore.
I will say this, Mikey. I agree.
Thank you.
That there are problems with this film.
Absolutely. Every joke told in this film is a problem.
Yes.
However, I will also tell you that the other, like a couple weeks ago, I was at home and I was like, I'm just going to put on a movie or something to relax and enjoy watching while I work on stuff for work.
Yeah.
And I chose Bloodsport. So like, these are the movies that endure. I've never sat down and been like, you know what? It's a relaxing day. Let's go with Dead Poets Society.
Yeah. I've never thought to myself, I've got to edit this episode of whatever. Let's throw on the King's Speech. Like, you just don't do that.
Right.
You throw on stuff like this. Yeah.
I mean, this movie's really dumb. Don't get me wrong. It's really dumb.
That's all I'm saying.
But I think that makes it more enjoyable.
Yeah, I think it's awesome.
I do think there is a level of not being detail-oriented that both hurt this movie and helped this movie. Because in that lack of, I guess, care about plot and a lot of other things.
And storytelling.
We lose a lot of details that are unnecessary that I think worse movies get bogged down in.
Yes.
Like, we're immediately into the action. The pace of this movie is perfect, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think, and this is coming from more of like a higher level critique, the over-the-top testosterone masculinity works in its favor when they meet Predator, who scares the shit out of them. Because for like half the movie, you see this like ultra testosterone manly group. And like by the end, all of them are cracking up one by one crying. And like, I think that works in its favor of how scary this creature is, because these people are not even like real manly. They're like a caricature of like testosterone.
Yeah.
And for them to break, it's like, well, what actually is this thing?
Yeah, when Billy says, we're all going to die, I think that was the first time I recognized what these stakes were, right? Because they are such a, nothing's going to mess with us, like we're badass dudes who can get through anything together. Like, until that moment, I was like, oh, they're definitely going to survive. They're going to kill it. It's going to be fun the way they do it. But Billy was like, we're all going to die. Yeah. I was like, oh, shit. Maybe they are all going to die. But let's get into the fucking movie. Yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, if you watch this on YouTube, it recommends the next thing for you to watch is The Thing.
Yes.
That's a good double feature right there.
That is a perfect double feature, yes.
And both of these movies, I think, are better because they had production delays.
Yes. The Thing is, I would argue and say The Thing is maybe one of my favorite horror movies of all time.
It is
my favorite.
It was also Mikey's first official episode as a co-host.
And it's also 10 times better than Predator.
Oh, my God. Yeah. The Thing is way better than Predator. But I feel like work from kind of the same idea. And The Thing had predated Predator by about 5 years. So it's probably an inspiration. Also, we'll be peppering in some fun facts along the way, and then Mikey and I have a bunch of fun facts at the end. If you're curious about where a lot of those are coming from source-wise, a lot of them are coming from an article from The Hollywood Reporter called Guns and Shea Butter, An Oral History of Predator. You might also want to check out the Wizard and the Bruiser episode on Predator, which covers a lot of the production delays and basically how hard it was for them to make this movie.
And my fun facts come from the fact that my mom read every magazine of Entertainment Weekly and TV Guide for like 30 years. And then would just tell me fun facts about movies I loved as I watched them.
That was, I believe, a birthday present for me when I was like 10 or 11 to get Entertainment Weekly. And then we just kept getting it forever.
Yeah, my mom would see like a body throw up. She's like, did you know Jean-Claude Van Damme was the first Predator? I'm like, really?
And I'm into that yet. We've got to save that end. Okay. That's okay. So we open on a spaceship clearly designed in MS Paint.
Yeah.
It drops a pod to Earth.
Okay. It does look dated because it was 86 or 87 when they...
87.
Yeah, it looked great for the time, I think. You know, it is dated now, but I think it looked great for the time.
This is also, if you rewatch The Thing, 1982, there's a very similar scene and it's about the same quality, but it's this same like ship, something goes to Earth, movie starts.
Right. Yeah. And I do like that then the movie starts and for the next like 40 minutes, it is just a jungle action film. There's no alien. There's nothing out of the ordinary outside of they're just going on a mission or whatever. I really like that.
Yeah, it might as well be Commando 2, because you got...
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think it's actually a little scarier on a rewatch, because you know that some of the things they find in that first 40 minutes are not the guerrilla forces that they think they are.
Right.
And that adds a layer. So it actually makes it a little bit better rewatching it. So after we see the spaceship, we cut to helicopters landing on the beaches of an island, and it is... nondescript. It's honestly not until about 20 more minutes into the movie where you hear people speaking Spanish that you realize it's South America because
it's also not important.
Yeah, it's not important to the story.
And besides the fact that they're speaking Spanish, I mean, they could have just made up a language. Like, it's just like not a real thing.
Yeah.
The border.
Yes. And they never define what that border is or where people are going because it's not important to the story. In fact, in future Predator films, and I think it's the case with the most recent one, they're not even on Earth, and it's basically the same movie, where they get, like, transported to another planet, but it is jungle. It's the same idea. So, we see a bunch of buff-ass dudes getting off the helicopters, including Jesse the Body Ventura, governor of Minnesota.
Right.
This is his first film.
Yes. He's great in it.
He is.
Insufferable as a character, but he's so good in this movie.
He plays it so good.
I'm sure he's just playing himself, really. Like, if you gave Jesse the Body Ventura a chain Gatling gun and just had him walk around a jungle, like, that's how he would act.
Here's a fun fact, just a quick peppered in one. The casting director who worked on Predator, when they got the script, they wanted to cast all Vietnam vets. And because it was the early 80s, they physically could potentially do that. So Jesse was one of the first people that they cast, and he is a Vietnam vet.
Oh, okay.
And so that's why they cast him. They're like, he's a professional wrestler, so we're sure we can get him to act, but he's a legit Vietnam vet. We should definitely get him. And then as soon as they cast him, they basically gave up on trying to get all Vietnam vets because they're like, most of them don't act. They're real messed up about it. And
it's like war does bad things to your brain.
Yeah. So they just went on casting everybody else. The last person to get off the helicopters in this scene is Arnold, former governor of California. And he steps off the helicopter smoking a cigar. This is peak Arnold.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is the best Arnold's ever looked, is this movie.
I think so.
This is the first time I ever found myself slightly attracted to Arnold Schwarzenegger. I was just like, I kind of get it.
No joke. When I saw how wide his shoulders were, I was like, I'm surprised Paige is making it past this scene without just pausing it and just staring for a while.
To be honest, I was watching this movie and I was like, I saw this as a child. This explains a lot.
One thing I noticed about this is, like, America how it is now is, like, I'm like, it's kind of weird that Arnold Schwarzenegger, who, you know, where's he from?
From Austria.
Austria. Is, like, in Reagan's 80s, he's the American hero.
Yeah.
Right? Well, it kind of reminds, I hate to keep bringing up Bloodsport, but it's the same thing of, like, in Bloodsport when Jean-Claude Van Damme is like, it's me, American soldier with a French accent.
From Brussels, yeah.
From Brussels. But he's considered, like, peak American Frank Dukes. Like, that. It's that. And that's like,
Can you imagine someone making an action film today and being like, this guy's going to play the head American commando.
Right.
He is from Austria and has a very thick accent. And they'd be like, not my America.
Right?
Well, right now, I think our closest analog to Arnold is The Rock.
Right.
Who is from Samoa. He's Hawaiian. Yeah. So I feel like we've kind of made a turn so that our American ideal is American, but doesn't look stereotypically American. Yeah. And I appreciate that.
I guess that's progress, right?
Yeah, I guess.
All right, I'll take it.
No, I mean, he gets off the chopper and everyone's like, he's the best American soldier there ever was. And I'm like, okay, okay.
He's so good that they let him turn down missions.
Right, yeah.
That's insane, Mikey.
Well, here's what I think it is. I think they're mercenaries, not soldiers.
They're the A-team, more or less, that's what I got, too.
Is that
true?
Yes.
I thought they were American soldiers.
No, they are mercenaries.
I think they were.
I'm going to have to rewatch Predator 2 when Gary Busey talks about Arnold. I have to rewatch that scene to see what he says.
Wait, Arnold's not in Predator 2?
No. Gary Busey and Donald Glover are.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So they start getting off the helicopters and then getting into jeeps, passing villagers that have kind of come out to the docks but are keeping their distance. And then they drive in those jeeps across the beach, like, 4 feet. And then get back out of the jeeps to walk into the, like, office, basically.
That's so true.
And the general meets Arnold Schwarzenegger at the door and just says, you're looking good, Dutch. And he says, it's been a long time, General. And we're just like, no other information.
That's all we need.
Movies don't need information.
I agree, Mikey.
This is a perfect case study for the idea that show don't tell and movies don't need explanation, because you don't question it. This movie works.
Mm-hmm. And much like Arnold Schwarzenegger with the General, the plot just moves past it.
Yeah. Absolutely. The General is briefing him. And he says, 18 hours ago, we lost a chopper carrying a cabinet minister and his aide. They know the chopper's position, but it's on the wrong side of the border because it strayed off course. And they think that they've been captured by gorillas. That's gorillas with a U, not the monkeys.
Right.
But that would make for a pretty fucking great movie.
Holy shit. All right, hear me out. Planet of the AIDS mixed with Predator.
Oh my God, yes.
I would watch that.
Why is it Alien versus Predator? It should clearly be Planet of the Apes versus Predator. You damn dirty Predator! Yes! Yes. Arnold asks the General, and he's like, why me?
You're the best.
Yes, yeah. Some damn fool accused you of being the best.
That's what it was. And then Schwarzenegger goes, yeah. Dylan,
you son of a bitch.
And they have their arm wrestle handshake. Just Apollo Creed steps into the chat and then just arm wrestle handshake.
And they literally jerk each other's muscles off while having a conversation, like air arm wrestling. They're like,
you never knew when to quit.
Yeah.
They have a small conversation about the types of jobs that Arnold's team does.
Yeah, they only do rescue missions. They're not assassins, right. Paige.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's exactly.
That's why they didn't go to Libya.
Suggesting that they were asked to kill Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah, Gaddafi, yeah. Americans didn't need to do that. That was going to happen 20 years later by his own people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and heard about the job in Berlin. At this point in history, it was likely them smuggling people across the wall.
Oh, yeah.
Because the wall hadn't come down yet.
Yep. And these are things that audiences watching this movie originally would have thought about. So they lay out the coordinates of where they're going to go. They're going to track the helicopter at its last position, find the hostages, rescue them, and go back across the border before anyone knows they're there.
Right.
And
Carl Weathers is going with them.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger's like, I work alone. You're not going with us. But he loses, and Carl Weathers goes with them.
And also, Schwarzenegger does not work alone. He has a huge team with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
His team works alone. Come on, Todd.
I mean, I get that, but there's like 9 guys. Why not bring a 10th?
Well, because Carl Weathers is terrible.
I think Carl Weathers is amazing in this movie. How dare you, Mike?
In real life, he is so super nice. Like, yeah. He's, yes.
Tell us, Paige. Yeah. Tell us about that.
So when I worked at Sur La Table, he came into shop one day, and I was like, oh, my God, it's Carl Weathers. And nobody else recognized him.
Really?
Because I worked with a bunch of 20-year-olds who don't know the magic of this movie or Happy Gilmore. He's also, by the way, like 6'4". He's massive.
Yeah.
And he was just the nicest, super nice dude, and he was just like, hey, you guys have cooking classes? I was like, yeah. And we ended up talking for like 20 minutes about how he wants to take his lady, I don't know if they're married or not, I didn't ask, to Paris and take her to cooking classes because that's what she likes to do.
Aww.
And he was like buying a bunch of stuff for her, and he was the sweetest guy, and then shook my hand after, and it just like enveloped my whole hand.
I would have been starstruck.
It was one of those things where I tried so hard not to because I wanted to keep talking to him, and yeah, he was just so super nice.
That's
so
awesome.
I have nothing but good things to say about Carl Weathers.
Nothing gets me like starstruck, like acting weird, except for like people in movies like this from like the 80s that I grew up loving. Like I met Ernie Hudson, and I was like, oh my God, that's a Ghostbuster. And that guy freaked the fuck out.
I had to resist the urge to be like, oh my God, Chubbs, they stole your hand.
I would have, when he walked into the store, you should have been like, Dylan!
Dylan!
You son of a bitch!
We're on the helicopter, and this is the first pussy joke we hear.
Yeah, and this is the scene where we find out Shane Black's character has a small penis.
Yes.
I don't think I've ever watched this movie unedited and noticed these jokes. Like, I've seen it unedited, and then I'm watching it for the podcast, and I was like, oh no.
Yeah, I'm sure these didn't make the TNT cut.
And we kind of get a shot of like who each of these men is on the helicopter.
Yeah.
Like Mac is shaving for some reason.
Why?
And he shaves later in the movie too. I don't know why.
Yeah. It's like his nervous tick though. Like that's like his actor's choice or whatever.
And he's sweating so much that he can actually like shave. He has a lot of head sweat.
I think everyone would, because as we will find out in the fun facts of this movie, it was a nightmare to shoot this. Because they shot it in the summer in the actual rainforest.
Oh, my God.
This is also where Jesse Ventura is. It looked like beef jerky at first that he was passing around to people.
Yeah.
It was not. It was chewing tobacco. But he says, he offers it to people. They say no. And he says, bunch of slack-jawed gay slur, right. Around here. This stuff will make you a sexual Tyrannosaurus. Like me.
Yep.
And then he spits on Carl Weathers' boots.
Yeah. That's a power move right there. You declare yourself a sexual Tyrannosaurus and then spit on someone's shoes. Well,
and then after using a gay slur. I mean, it's basically the most toxically masculine 4 seconds of film in the history of existence.
So if you were to sum up this movie in a line of dialogue.
It'd be that. There's not a ton of dialogue in this movie in general.
Right.
And so this is the craziest thing that's said in this movie, because the rest of the things said in this movie are just like, if it can bleed, we can kill it. And like, that's it.
Well, until they get really scared. And then like Jesse like goes to his friend. He's like, you're my brother and I love you.
And yes.
Like, I'm like, what? What happened?
Honestly, towards the end, I thought Jesse Ventura and Mac had dated.
Right.
Like, I thought they may have been like a couple.
Headcanon, that would be amazing.
I mean, yeah.
I definitely think this movie reads like modern day of like how a thing can destroy toxic masculinity by like, you know, destroying the facade of masculinity. Because, like, by the end, everybody's hugging each other, hoping they survive. And they're, like, they're really sensitive about it, I feel like.
So, Carl Weathers, with chaw spit on his boots.
On his boots, yeah.
Leans forward and says, that's a real nasty habit you got there. And then Jesse Ventura just kind of smiles. And then they clip in and jump out of the helicopter.
Can I just say, before that, Carl Weathers and Dutch are talking. And, literally, Dutch says, who's the backup? And then Carl Weathers is like, no one. No one's backup. But that's something you should ask before you're crossing the border in a helicopter.
Yes.
Like, these are briefing questions.
Yeah.
They only talked for 30 seconds on the mission.
But Mikey, that is my point. Like, you need more prep time.
Bro, no.
If you're asking that in the chopper.
testosterone is the way forward. No questions. Just forward momentum.
We need to make that a shirt. Testosterone is the way forward.
Here's what I hate about this scene. It's having all these like dialogue and like everybody's painting face. You're getting introductions to each character.
Right.
But in the scenes, it looks like it's one helicopter.
Well, no, there are clearly two in
there's
the, clear, in the scenes.
But there's clearly two helicopters. And it never makes sense who's on one or the other because everyone's talking to each other.
Yes. And if you were to think of like who's on a different helicopter, it looks like Carl Weathers and Arnold are on a different helicopter, but then Jesse Ventura spits on his shoes, so you know that they're on the same helicopter.
And then Jesse Ventura has a scene with the other four guys.
Yes, so they are all on the same helicopter. There are just two helicopters.
So there's just an empty helicopter following them.
Yes, you do see them all rappel out of that one helicopter.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's almost like somebody who wasn't a military person wrote this movie.
But they do rappel onto the jungle floor, right? Like men.
So they're slowly moving through the woods, and they almost immediately find the cabinet minister's helicopter crashed in the trees.
Yeah.
It looks like it's been shot down. So they climb up into the cockpit, and they see that the pilot has been shot.
In the head.
Which made me believe that it actually was gorillas, because if it was the Predator, he would have strung them up, right?
It was gorillas. They see the prisoners in the camp get executed.
Right.
And the helicopter's been stripped of all its tech.
Yeah.
Which is another thing that kind of suggests gorillas, because the Predator has no need for that
stuff.
No.
They learned that the helicopter was shot down with a heat-seeking missile, and that's not normal guerrilla warfare behavior.
Right, and that sort of sets up as to why Carl Weathers may have gone with them.
Right. Now, it is debatable at this point in the movie, because the Predator is a heat seeker.
Yeah.
So he may have shot that helicopter down. Either he did or it's a bigger operation than they think. The movie really could go either way. It doesn't solve that question for you.
It doesn't need to.
This whole side plot of Carl Weathers and the gorillas being armed, but the CIA stuff, it's not important. It doesn't really come back. Don't worry about it.
It doesn't. It just gets us there, and that's all it matters. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. What it does do is it makes Arnold Schwarzenegger a little more suspicious of Dylan and why they're there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is a heat seeking missile is a little too sophisticated for a guerrilla army, but their tracker does find 12 sets of guerrilla footsteps and the people that they took from the helicopter. And he says, but there's something else. He found 6 tracks from men wearing U.S.-issued army boots.
Yeah.
They came in from the north, and they followed the guerrillas. And Carl Weathers just says it's probably another rebel patrol. They happen all the time. So he kind of explains it away.
Yeah, but doesn't explain why they are wearing American boots. But yeah.
This section and the noting that they're American army-issued boots is how we know that these men are mercenaries. Otherwise, they would also have army-issued boots.
I got you.
But instead, they have their own gear, and they kind of set themselves apart from the other U.S. people that they're finding.
Right. I guess that makes sense, yeah.
Just a note on costumes. So they are all mostly in jungle fatigues, specifically. But what I found really interesting, they all have super crazy broad shoulders and tiny waists because they're just like bodybuilders. And their shirts are cut exactly for them, and no shirts are cut that way. Like, they had to have clearly tailored their clothes to fit their insane body proportions.
Well, I mean, and their tailor subscribes to the suns out, guns out philosophy of shirt making.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So he sends his tracker Billy to get ahead and see what he can find. Arnold's clearly suspicious. Billy climbs what I believe, and I think a lot of the other things in this jungle, are a banyan tree.
We should go through the cast of characters right now before things get weird.
Oh, good luck. I don't know most of their names.
Okay, I'll go through it. Okay, so you have Dutch Arnold Schwarzenegger. You have Carl Weathers.
Dylan, yeah.
You have Billy the Tracker.
Right.
You have Jesse Ventura. You have Shane Black as the radar guy because he's the tech guy because he wears glasses. That's mm-hmm. his personality. Then you have like just generic Caucasian G.I. Joe guy.
Who is not Caucasian because he's the one who speaks Spanish.
Yeah.
That's your whole group, I think, right?
That's your whole group. They climb a banyan tree, and banyan trees kind of grow up and down at the same time. It's kind of, so there's like a lot of trunks to climb, okay. And there's kind of viney things that turn into more trunk-like apparatus. So Billy climbs up through this tree because he thinks he sees something in the leaves, and he finds 3 dead bodies and a whole bunch of vultures, and the bodies are stripped of their skin, hanging upside down.
And this looks really good. And
it holds up.
Yeah.
This effect holds up. There are a lot of things in this movie that do not hold up. This scare still got me. I forgot that they found these bodies.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, right, skinned alive. They also, all of their entrails are basically just piled on the ground because the vultures have been picking at them.
Yeah.
And they retrieve a set of dog tags from the intestines, just ones that I'm assuming have fallen off because they're hanging upside down.
Yeah.
And they cut the bodies down. The dog tags reveal that it's a green beret named Jim Hopper that Arnold knew and served with back when he was in the forces.
Yeah, and they were from Fort Bragg, he says.
Which is like the Green Berets of Green Berets. Yeah. Everyone's a little confused because they're like, no one knew there was an operation in the area, but someone clearly sent them. You know, these aren't just the local rebel patrol. This is the best of the best of the best, sir. And then they ask, why did they skin them? Because at this point, they're still assuming that it's the guerrilla army that is skinning them.
I would say probably not.
Yeah.
Oh, and this is when they say, we need to search the jungle. Get it 5 meters and no sound. Like, walk through the jungle. We're going to search, no sound. So Jesse Ventura pulls out his Gatling gun and starts walking around the jungle. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And says it's payback time.
It's insane. Yeah.
Fun fact about the Gatling gun. This gun did not exist.
I have some number facts about why it can't exist. Yes.
It's expensive.
Well, it's not only is it expensive, he's wearing a backpack of bullets that if he shot like he shoots in that scene where they're like mowing down the jungle, he would have dropped his whole load, I'm so sorry, of bullets in like 30 seconds and that would have been it.
I have a fun fact. So if he wanted to bring this gun and fire for 5 minutes out of this entire mission, so if he wanted to have 5 minutes worth of firing power, that would have been 1,000 bullets. And would have essentially weighed 30 pounds. So it would have weighed almost the same as a third of his gear.
Yeah.
Total.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
of
my God.
Just bullets. And that's not even counting the weight of the gun itself.
Which is like 70 pounds.
Yes. Between the gun and the amount of bullets he would have to have, it's a whole extra person's amount of weight to carry through the jungle for 5 minutes of firing power.
So that one scene.
Worth one scene. Worth it.
The other thing is Billy starts to kind of investigate the area and Dutch asks him what happened. And Billy says there was a firefight. They were shooting in all directions. And Dutch says, I can't believe they walked into an ambush. And Billy says, I don't think they did. There's no tracks.
Yeah.
So this on a rewatch lets you know the Predator is the one that has killed the Green Berets.
Yes.
We then go into this monster view, infrared vision.
Yeah, heat vision.
Of the group. So we know they're being watched.
By something.
They're quietly making their way through the jungle. Carl Weathers slips and Mac threatens to kill him for making noise.
Yeah, after Jesse Ventura walks around heavy booted with the biggest gun, like making a lot of noise.
In an MTV t-shirt.
And I forgot about that shirt. Oh, my God. I guess Mac doesn't care about that because they're dating. But so he, like, goes to yell at Carl Weathers because he can't yell at his boyfriend. I get that. That makes sense.
So they get to the gorilla camp. This is the first time we see the gorillas speaking Spanish. And so we kind of have established that we're somewhere in South America. They see one of the hostages, but then they see one of the gorillas just immediately shoot that hostage in the head.
Yeah, it was insane. I was writing in my notes, oh, they found a prisoner. Never mind. A dead prisoner.
And I was like, why even keep them hostage? Why bring them back? Just if you're just going to shoot them.
What you didn't see was them just get off the phone with Reagan and Reagan called their bluff on not paying them ransom. So they just killed them.
Yeah. This is also where Jesse Ventura starts to unpack the bandolier that his gun will need. And we reveal that his entire backpack is basically full of bullets.
Yeah.
So, I mean, your math checks out. I mean, it's Matt carries his gear so he can carry all his bullets.
That's what
there
it is.
You go. There you go. This is also where Jesse Ventura notices that there's trip wires. So they cut the trip wire. And then the other, I think Arnold and the one who speaks Spanish, stab another set of gorillas in the neck.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they're like taking out their perimeter location so that Dutch can go up and set that trap.
My favorite part of these scenes is the gratuitous close-ups of people with binoculars in their eyes.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Here's Arnold Schwarzenegger just slowly.
Yeah.
back and forth. And I was like, this is the best. They don't lay out any other details of the whole film except they're using binoculars, and we need you to know that.
My favorite thing about this scene is we kind of look over the ridge and we look down on the guerrilla camp, and there's like two or three buildings there. It's not huge. And then Arnold sends a car with a bomb in it into the main building. At this point, I was like, well, all the hostages are dead now, I guess.
Well, Paige, he legit throws like a literal pack of dynamite or whatever in the bed of a truck, and then
he
lifts it. Yeah, he lifts it and pushes it. So it then goes, like, I could not believe this scene because it slowly rolls into just like gorillas eating lunch or whatever. And then it blows up and kills all of them.
This is like a one half ton pickup truck.
Yeah.
That would destroy everything for like a mile. Like, that's so wild.
Yeah. Like him just deadlifting it. And he's like, I know a way to sneak in. I'm just going to deadlift this truck. At least everyone else acknowledges. They're like, what is he doing? Like, this is not how you rescue people.
And this is also like, you watch him do it. So I'm like, there's no stunt double. I think Arnold just kind of lifted a truck.
He did. Yeah. But you're right, Mikey. Dylan literally says, what's he doing? Like,
yes. So it's a shower of explosions, explosions here, explosions there, explosions everywhere. And then in the middle of it, Arnold throws a knife, which is clearly rubber, and it kills a guy, and he just says, stick around.
Okay, so it did bother me that he does this, the stick around thing, and then later in this same scene, he kicks the door open and says, knock, knock, right before killing the two guys in that room.
It's literally the very next thing he does. It's his
amazing.
Next
but when he kills the predator at the end, spoiler alert, there is no, like, catchphrase at the end. Like, there should have been a great one there at the end.
Because, Todd, this movie is an attack on toxic masculinity.
Clearly it is, Mikey. Yeah.
Alternate theory. He does those catchphrases for the people he's about to kill. So it's, like, the last cool thing they hear.
They're about to die, and they're like, aw.
The Predator doesn't really speak English, necessarily. So he's like, the Predator's not going to enjoy when I'm like, nice to meet you. And, you know, like...
The Predator only speaks violence.
Yes.
It's just good to see a group of people doing what they love, you know?
Murder.
So they find a girl. She tries to shoot Arnold. He knocks her out.
And then does not disarm her. She's laying on the ground with a gun in her hand. And he is so confident in his ability to knock out women that he goes and has a conversation with Dutch while she is still armed.
Over her body.
Yeah, over her body.
Let's not skip over the fact that he makes a really disgusted face that he can't kill her because he has figured out she's a woman.
Yes, yes.
He's like, oh. He makes a face. He's like, a woman's in this movie?
So, at this point, one of the other team members runs in and tells him that both hostages are dead. And I'm like, shocker, everything's on fire. Like, of course they're dead.
Yeah.
You probably killed them.
I definitely don't know what happened. He was in the building you hit with a truck, Dutch.
But they also revealed that the cabinet minister was CIA and the other hostages were Russian. Yeah. So this is a lot like Afghanistan as far as what he was referring to.
But Dylan also is like picking up these papers and he's like, oh, we hit the mother load or whatever he says of, I guess, intelligence.
Right. At this point, we also see that Jesse Ventura has been hit and he says, I ain't got time to bleed. And
yeah.
Shane Black says, oh, okay.
Do you have time to duck? Yeah.
And then he shoots three grenades straight in the air.
Yeah. Yes. And somehow, Mikey, it works.
Yep. So we cut back to Carl Weathers and Arnold, where Arnold is finally realizing that they are there under false pretenses. And the reason that they've been told to extract these hostages is completely different. There are no hostages to extract. This was purely to murder this guerrilla army and gain their intelligence. And that's not the type of work that his guys do.
Right.
So he's mad that they got set up and he basically asks him, what did you tell the people who got skinned alive?
Yeah, because Dylan obviously sent that group there.
Right. And the story they got about the helicopter only being down 18 hours means that either they called in the Green Berets, they immediately got killed, and then they called in Arnold, or they were lying about the timeline and it was all bullshit.
But ultimately, it doesn't matter because we just keep chugging along.
Right.
Ultimately, none of these plot points matter because an alien comes and tries to murder all of them.
Yeah.
Right.
In about 12 minutes.
It doesn't matter because Carl Weathers basically says, you're an asset and you're expendable. And Arnold says, my men are not expendable and I don't do this kind of work. Foreshadowing the fact that everyone in this movie is about to be expendable.
And also in the movie Expendables in about 30 years.
Yes. So they take the girl with them.
Can I ask why they take the girl with them? Like, does
Carl Weathers says she's a treasure trove of intelligence.
Yeah, okay. she'll know things.
Dutch's group is super pissed and was like, well, then she's your problem. You keep up with her.
And if you fall behind, that's on you. I remember them saying that. Yeah.
Now, they have Billy, their tracker, trying to lay out a course for them to get out of this guerrilla army territory because they're surrounded on three sides by the army. And he basically lets Arnold know that their only option is to go through a valley that's a very, very difficult hike. So he basically said, I wouldn't wish it on anyone, but that's their only option. So we see a lot of the heat vision in this section, kind of on and off, where he's kind of listening to their plans and watching where they're moving.
Right.
And then at a certain point, Mac calls Carl Weathers over.
Yeah, I love
turn around and places a knife on his shoulder. You think he's gonna stab him.
It looks like it, yeah.
It looks like it, but instead he pulls a scorpion off his shoulder. And scorpions are largely desert animals. There are a few that are jungle varieties, but I think they just thought it would look cool.
It did.
They were right, Paige. Yeah, it looks really cool. Yeah.
It looks really cool. We then hear Shane Black's pussy echo joke. And I have a note here that says, he better be the first to die, completely forgetting about the fun facts I have about it.
Oh, yeah.
But so they move into the jungle. The tracker knows something's up. So Billy is kind of looking around. He's a little suspicious, but he goes onto the trail. We see the monster vision again, and we see a claw pick up the scorpion that they stabbed on Carl Weathers' shoulder.
I thought this was a cool effect because he's seeing the heat vision, and the scorpion is still a little warm, and then you see it go cold in his hand.
Yep.
I thought it was cool, especially for 87. I thought it was great.
Yeah, and you see he has a monster hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're walking through the jungle. The girl tries to escape.
Yeah, because Carl Weathers got outsmarted by a handcuffed prisoner.
Yeah, he's not a great mercenary. Let's put it that way. Arnold gives the order to stop because Billy, their tracker, is clearly afraid of something.
I thought this part was really cool because he's standing out sort of in the open, just staring. And everyone's like looking at him like, what is he doing? Clearly, this is not normal behavior for him.
Yeah.
And then Dutch walks over and is like, what's up, man? What's going on? And he's like, there's something in those trees.
Yeah. Which is very eerie.
I thought that was really cool.
Everyone's like, there's nothing in the trees. And he's like, it must be nothing. But then we see the monster vision. It is in the trees. Like, he is looking directly at it.
He's just a great tracker, I guess.
And this is when the film shifts from like action movie to like horror movie.
Oh, yeah, it definitely does. I do like that when Billy is up there by himself and Arnold Schwarzenegger gets up to the other guys that are like just staring at Billy. He looks at the other guy and goes, what's going on with Billy? And the other guy's like, I don't know. Like, I'm not next to him. I can't ask him what's wrong with him. Go talk to him.
This is a really random note, but I feel like this scene also exists to demonstrate that Arnold is a good leader who trusts his team.
Yeah.
Because instead of just being like, come on, Billy, don't be stupid, he goes over to Billy and is like, you track shit, you know shit, what's going on?
And he trusts his team, yeah.
So the girl tries to run again. And Shane Black's character, the radar guy with the glasses, chases her and catches up to her. And there's something kind of clear moving through the trees where it's like they almost make it look like an optical illusion on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's running through the trees. It jumps out, immediately kills that guy, bathing the girl in blood.
Yeah.
It's cool. This is a cool scene.
It is pretty cool, yeah.
And drags him off.
Drags him off into the trees, and the girl is clearly freaked out.
Yeah.
The other mercenaries arrive, They find his intestines. They basically say, did you find Hawkins, which apparently was his name? And he says,
I think that's the first time you hear his name, though.
Yeah, I think it is. And he's, and did you find Hawkins? I can't tell.
Which is so creepy.
I will say this is Schwarzenegger's best acting in this movie because he's looking his face towards the camera, but the guy who's looking for Hawkins is behind him. So yeah. We see his reaction to the news of, I can't tell if I found Hawkins. And yeah. There is a noticeable shift. I'm not saying that he's a bad actor, but he does like his best work right there.
He's really good in this movie.
Yeah, I think he is.
They get the one mercenary that speaks Spanish to ask the girl how it happened.
Yeah.
And she says the jungle came alive and took him. And Carl Weathers is like, bullshit, that's not what she said, that doesn't make any sense. There are like two or three gorillas out there, which is something that he's going to say over and over again through the rest of this movie when it is painfully clear that it is not gorillas anymore.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's super late to the it's a predator party.
And he has the smallest machine guns, so that's how you know that he's not the best.
Right.
But he's got two, Mikey.
He doesn't have that Gatling gun.
No, he's got submachine guns because he makes subpar decisions.
They kind of reconvene around the girl and they basically say, why didn't they take Hawkins' radio or his weapon? And why didn't the girl try to escape? And then Carl Weathers says they did the same thing to Jim Hopper.
Yeah.
Basically linking what has happened here is the same thing that happened to those Green Berets. It's going to be a problem. And so they spread out to try and find Hawkins' body. And Arnold Schwarzenegger gets face to face with a giant snaky snake. And then the camera pans upward and Hawkins' body is hanging above him and he just can't see it.
Yeah, it's such a good scene.
It is. This is where it amps up the horror stuff, the horror elements of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not really at all a horror movie until this stuff starts to happen.
Yeah, then it makes like a hard left into horror. Yeah,
right.
So we cut to Jesse Ventura moving through the trees, and he hears something moving in the jungle. So he gets his Gatling gun ready, but it's too late because he gets a giant laser blast right through the chest.
Yes.
Yeah.
The other mercenaries run over and they kind of see the cloaking devices where Mac sees it for the first time.
No, it's just Mac and he sees it.
And then everyone follows, but by the time they get there, it's gone.
Mac starts firing, picks up the Gatling gun, starts firing, and then there's a show of like, these are my best friends. If you find your best friend in the jungle, just shooting out in the jungle, you just immediately start firing into the same direction that your best friend's firing.
Absolutely. Mikey, 100%. If your boyfriend just got murdered by a predator and you picked up your boyfriend's Gatling gun and started hosing down the jungle, I would start using my two SMGs and I would just start hosing it down with you.
It was everyone. Everyone came, fired, reloaded, fired more. It was like a 4-minute scene where they just fired indiscriminately into the jungle. And I'm here for it.
They light the jungle up, literally until they're almost out of ammunition.
They're like chopping down trees with bullets.
Yes.
It's insane.
They stop to examine Jesse Ventura's body, which is where they find out that there's no powder burns and that his chest is just fucking open, but the wounds are all cauterized.
Yes. Which is crazy.
It is, yeah.
Yes.
So he's not like bleeding profusely. I mean, he's super, super dead, right? But all the wounds are cauterized because it just blew a hole through him. But it was like such a high temperature energy weapon, I guess. It just cauterizes as it goes through you, which is terrifying.
And they ask Mac, they're like, who did this? Because Mac is clearly not okay. He clearly saw some shit and he is emotionally and mentally not processing the death of his friend well.
It's rough. When you lose a loved one like that, it's hard, man.
Yeah.
I get it.
He basically just says, I don't know. I saw something.
Yeah.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger, to his credit, immediately believes him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And starts mobilizing people. Everyone in this movie, aside from Carl Weathers, I would say does exactly what they should do in this situation.
Agreed.
And makes rational choices and still just gets killed to shit.
Yeah. I think that makes it scarier. Like, he sends the two people to go check where they just shot everything to see if they hit anything or they found a body or anything like that.
They literally come back and say, we hit nothing. We shot nonstop for 7 minutes and we hit nothing.
And he tells Dylan to get on the radio to try and arrange for transport.
Yeah, they need an extraction. But the general's like, we can't come get you. You're too far in or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have to try and get further out by the next morning.
Right, by 10:30 a.m.
So this is where the girl, their prisoner, finds the predator's blood on a tree.
Yeah. It's like a big leaf, right? It's like a big leaf that it's got the neon blood on.
And she rubs it on her leg. And in my mind, I was thinking so it could track her. But now I'm wondering if it was to keep her safe. They don't really explain why she does it.
I think that she knew about this sort of being from before.
Yeah.
Because she mentions that there's a legend about it. I don't think she ever had a run-in with it before, but her village or wherever she's from has. So,
but also, she touched it and it was all sticky, so she had to wipe it off. Fun fact, the blood is actually just the inside of glow sticks.
Yeah, it's just glow sticks.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they were like, what are we going to use for the blood of this predator? And they were like, I don't know, but they got these coupons to Party City, so we'll figure something out.
Originally, the blood was orange, but it didn't show up enough.
Oh.
And so in testing for it, so they actually moved to glow in the dark, in part because of the final scene that largely takes place at night.
Yeah.
And at night, the glow stick stuff shows up really, 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 really well.
Yeah, it's almost like it's glowing.
Yeah, it doesn't show up as well in this scene, so they actually had to, like, paint back over some of the footage to make it show up better during the daytime.
I do think it's great that we find out through the connected universe of horror that predator blood is how the reanimator reanimates.
So Dylan gets on the radio. They find out they can't get out. They start to set up flares and trip wires.
Yeah, they're setting up like a perimeter to like keep themselves safe until early, early morning when they're going to start hiking out to the extraction site.
And they basically say nothing is coming near this place without tripping something. And this is where Mac and Arnold have kind of like a heart-to-heart conversation where Arnold basically says about Jesse Ventura, he was a good soldier. And Mac says, he was my friend.
Yeah.
And lover.
Yeah. Okay, so watch it now. If you haven't seen it, watch it now. It does sort of play that way. And I think that's great.
Honestly, it would improve the film for me.
I think so, too. He like goes to the body, gives him his like little bottle. And then he talks about like, remember when there was 32 other people with us and we went to the jungle and then me and you were the only ones who survived and we've been together ever since?
Yeah. That's one hell of a meet cute, Mikey.
Yeah. One hell of a. And he's like, I'm going to miss you. And then covers the body. And I'm like, what happened to those guys in that chopper?
Yeah,
I honestly can't wait till we cover their origin story on Romancing the Pod.
This is where we see the blood on the girl's leg start to kind of glow.
Yeah.
And then we cut to the predator who uncloaks his leg, which is covered in green blood. And he opens basically a surgery kit and starts cleaning his wound.
And then we hear him screaming. And of course, we see them hearing the predator scream, you know?
And in part, I think because the predator like sets the bone in his leg.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, this is kind of smart because they never show the full predator until the very end.
It's sort of like Jaws in that sense.
They kind of ask Mac again, and Mac basically tells them he doesn't know what it looks like. It was camouflage, but he did see the eyes, and then the eyes disappeared.
Which you saw. I mean, we saw that. We saw the eyes sort of glow yellow and then kind of fade back into the invisibleness that is this cloaking technology.
And this is also where Arnold Schwarzenegger basically tells Mac to take the first watch so that he can get some rest. Which I would have just said, like, hey, Mac, you don't have to do the watch at all today, but I don't think they have enough people left.
Yeah. Well, Mac, if you hadn't let your boyfriend die, you'd be able to sleep all night, but take the first watch.
So he goes out to take the first watch. They start kind of asking the girl again if she knows anything about it. She says no. Billy is on edge, the tracker.
Yeah, he knows something's up.
And they actually say, Billy, you know something. And Billy says, I'm scared. There's something out there waiting for us, and it ain't a man. We're all gonna die.
That's when I was like, oh, shit. Billy knows what's up. Yeah.
Right? So good.
And at this point, Carl Weathers says, again, he's losing his cool. There's just a couple guys out there, and we got to take him down. And I'm like, what part of laser cannon don't you understand?
Or cloaking technology. I mean, there's something out there that's way more advanced than we are.
And everyone believes them except Carl Weathers. Like, even the prisoner. She's like, I don't want to go.
I'm good. And literally they answer Carl Weathers back, whatever is out there killed Hopper and now it wants us. And Hopper was the skin soldier before. So Mac is losing it and yelling at the moon.
Literally.
When something trips the flares and Mac stabs it to death, but it turns out it's a pig.
Yeah.
which everyone has a good laugh about.
Seems like a weird time to laugh to me, but yeah.
Yeah, everyone has a laugh about it, but then they get back to camp and they realize that the girl hasn't tried to escape.
Right.
Which means that she is scared.
Yeah.
And the predator has stolen Jesse Ventura's body.
Yes.
Yep.
Which I think is insane. If we were being hunted by something and a wild pig runs through our camp and then we kill the pig and we come back and a body is missing, why? I had so many questions about that. Like, what does he want with the body?
Trophies.
Like, why didn't he kill any of us? No, I mean, it answers it later. Yeah, yeah. You're right. Yeah, we do know. But at that point in the movie, I was like, oh, that's so scary.
Yeah, and it didn't set off any trip wires.
But that's when Dutch looks to the heavens and he's like, it's using the trees.
He came to get the body. He's skinning us one at a time like a hunter.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
using the trees. Then he asks the girl again in English, yesterday, what did you see?
Yeah, because he's like, I will yell at you loud enough for you to learn English very quickly.
And she does. She has English shooken into her by Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, I like to think that she knew it all along and just didn't want to give them information. And at this point, she is now scared enough that it does not matter.
That's how I got it. Dutch is like, no more games. What is trying to kill us?
Yeah. And she says, I didn't know what it was. It changed colors like a chameleon. It uses the jungle.
Yeah.
But Carl Weathers still thinks it's people. Arnold Schwarzenegger asks her her name, and then he tells her, it's hunting us, all of us, Anna. Meaning you too.
Yeah.
At this point, we know that the chopper is 10 to 12 miles away, and they're nearing their time for the rendezvous. And so Carl Weathers just wants to go to the chopper. And Arnold Schwarzenegger says, we need to make a stand now or there will be no one left to go to the chopper.
Right.
Which is so crazy. But true.
Yeah, I mean, he's right. I feel like that's the right call to make because right now you have the numbers. And if he just continues to pick you off one by one, you'll all die slowly.
And this is where Anna speaks up and she says, when the big man was killed, you must have wounded it because its blood was on the leaves. And this is where we get the most famous line in this movie, which is,
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
So they start setting traps and explosives, but they're setting them kind of with vines and in the trees.
Yeah, they're like jungle traps.
And Carl Weathers is like, you really think this Boy Scout shit is going to work? And Arnold Schwarzenegger says, well, maybe it can see the trip wires. Maybe it can't see this.
Right.
And instead of complaining, maybe you should help, which is the signal for everyone to get shirtless and pull on vines.
Yeah. Biceps.
It is like a ba 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 ba. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I will say, we are making a bunch of jokes about all this, but this movie does an incredible job of keeping tension throughout.
Yeah.
You feel the fear that these people are doing. Like, you're on the edge of your seat. Like, this is pretty, pretty good.
I did think it was insane that the Predator was like, oh, I'm going to let them set their traps. I'm going to wait until they're good and ready. Because he does this two times in the movie where he does not attack while they're setting up.
But Todd, it cuts to the Predator to show what he's doing, and he's cleaning the trophy of Jesse Ventura's body.
I mean, sure, that probably took 5 minutes. They spent conservatively 8 hours setting up these traps in the jungle.
Not with those biceps.
I think part of the Predator's MO, and we see this later on in his kind of like, you know, standoff with Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Predator wants it to be hard.
He does it for the sport.
The Predator is doing it for the sport. So I think he's intentionally letting them regroup. He's going to go off and clean his kill, and then he's going to come back and continue to hunt them.
Yeah.
So we see Mac shaving again and snaps the razor against his face.
He starts bleeding. Yeah.
This is where we get the rest of Anna's story, where she says, when I was little, we found a man in the jungle who looked like he'd been butchered. It happens in the hottest years, and it's a hot year.
Oh.
And they would find their men skinned or butchered because he keeps trophies.
Yeah.
And that's all she tells them. So, like, she doesn't really know what it is. She just knows that growing up, some years when it was hot, men would just get straight up murdered in the jungle, and she would find them skinned like this.
And that's probably all she knows, in all fairness. And I don't think she's withholding any information. I think she sees them as her only way to get out of this alive. So I don't think she's like withholding anything. I just don't think she knows much. She knows some, but not much.
Right. They're all kind of watching, but nothing is happening. They've kind of watching their traps in the clearing. And finally, Arnold kind of walks out as bait and they actually it trips the net.
This was insane.
Now, Todd, did you jump scare this?
Yeah, I jump scared this a little bit.
Yeah, I was like, oh shit, it's right behind him. Yeah, I thought it was awesome. Yep.
The net trips, and then it starts firing to try and get out of the net.
Yeah,
and then
wildly.
Bounces off through the trees. But the cloaking device has malfunctioned because they're all firing at it too.
Yeah.
So now they kind of actually get to see him in his armor, revealing him to be a Power Ranger villain from the 90s. And this is where we get probably the other most famous line in this movie, where Arnold Schwarzenegger just yells, "Get to the chopper!"
Yeah.
And it endures forever.
It does. And it's used as a joke, but he actually sells the line like he's really concerned about everyone and like,
yeah,
we're going to die. Get to the chopper.
Yeah, I think so too. And the chopper's miles away at this point.
It's 10 miles away.
And one of the soldiers got injured by one of their traps because the tree trunk swung down and hit him in the chest.
Well, and then Mac chases the predator because he's fueled by his broken heart.
Yeah.
Yes. So he runs off after it. And Dylan tells Dutch he's going to go after Mac. So Dutch hands Dylan an extra gun so he can double fist.
Yeah.
And Dylan says, hold on to the chopper. Basically like, I'll be right back. I just got to shoot these two gorillas that I still believe that it is for some reason. So Mac runs into the jungle and he's losing it. He's taking off all his gear. He only takes his gun and his bag of bullets.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is this is not a gun that would require a bandolier. It's like a semi-auto. He doesn't need all the bullets. They clipped a bandolier on it to make it look more badass.
Yeah, it looks really cool, Paige. I don't understand.
It does look cool. I'm not saying it doesn't look cool.
He was paying homage to his dead boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dylan goes after him, finds Mac basically hidden, and Mac says he can see it out there past the trees. And he can. It's on a branch out there.
Yeah.
And they're going to try and kill it. So they're going to try and move into position so they can surround it.
This is the worst plan I've ever heard in my life. Dylan's plan is to walk around behind it and then scare it towards Mac. So it will be directly in between Mac and Dylan. And then they will shoot at it. And if they miss, kill each other.
Yep.
It's literally the worst plan you could ever have.
And this thing can't jump really fast or fly through the air through the trees.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's
right.
They're expecting it to function just like a person. And everything we've learned about it, we know that that's not the case. But they don't even get a chance to do that because we see three red laser dots on Mac's head, which become ubiquitous for the franchise. But he fires and Mac's head explodes
onto the camera. It is graphic.
It is pretty graphic. It's pretty great.
And for some reason, Carl Weathers doesn't know that that's happened.
Well, Carl Weathers is gone. He ran away to go get behind it. Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't hear it or anything. So everyone else is running for the chopper. And this is where Arnold Schwarzenegger says to Anna, he kills for sport. So if you're not armed, he's not going to kill you. So she keeps trying to pick up a gun to help, and he keeps, like, slapping it out of her hands.
Yes.
Like, two or three times. This is really wild.
It's really sweet, but also terrifying.
Yeah.
And also kind of sexist, because he has no problem with any of the men having guns, but he's like, hey, lady, no bullets, no shoot, no bang, bang for you.
I would totally give her a gun.
Yeah. Why not? That's one more person that could get killed that might let you get away.
It is super sexist. If it was written today, there should have been a throwaway line of, it never sees you with a gun. It doesn't think you're a threat. We can't give you one now because someone has to make it out.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of how it is in this movie. That's sort of how it plays.
Well, no, he slaps her and he's like, killing aliens is man's work.
Here's the thing, though. If this is really the case, if that is concrete canon within the Predator universe, why doesn't everyone drop all their weapons and just walk out of the jungle?
Probably because
they've already fought it.
Yeah. It's,
yeah. Okay.
But I mean, that also never gets answered in this movie. So you don't know.
You don't know.
Yeah.
So Carl Weathers keeps tracking it and circles back and finds Mac's body.
Yeah.
He sees the Predator on a branch and aims, and the Predator laser blasts his arm off, but then the arm keeps firing the gun.
It does. And then I literally have in my notes, it shot off one of his arms. Good thing he has a second. And he swings his other arm around to shoot at the Predator with, you know, his still attached left arm, I think. And then the Predator stabs him through the midsection with those two knives on his hand.
It's the coolest kill in the movie.
It is the coolest kill in the movie. I'll agree
absolutely
with that. Yeah,
because he sees him running towards him. He's shooting him. It's all slow motion. It's in the arms fired next to him.
It's pretty
so
epic.
Good.
Yeah.
We cut to the rest of the group running away. And Billy stops because he's just over it. He's like, kill me now. So he dumps all his gear and he slices his chest so that the Predator can smell the blood.
It was insane.
And then we cut away. Judging by the screams, that was a bad idea.
So he dies off screen. Like, he literally, I think, sacrifices himself for no reason.
Yeah, because it doesn't gain them any time. It doesn't, you know.
No.
I think he just had a mental break. He was like, I'm not going to make it out. I'm sick of wondering if I'm going to die. Let me die. This is suicide by Predator.
I agree.
I think something happened in production because
Carl Weathers
just got killed by the cool expendable knife that comes out of the Predator's arm, which is extendable knives are cool. I loved it.
Yeah.
And then Billy was like, I'm going to fight this thing mano a mano, strips it all down except for his knife. And what we're missing is the knife fight.
Right.
And I might have notes as to why that.
Oh.
It must have gone terrible or something and they had to just like cut it.
Well, I have some notes about the guy who played Billy and everyone else's experience with him on set.
That might explain
a little bit of why.
Okay.
So this is the second time we hear "Get to the chopper" yelled. We see the heat vision again. He does kind of send Anna off to run to the chopper, so she makes it, as far as we know.
Oh, wait. And the guy who's injured gets shot in the head, like, very quickly.
Oh,
right. He's,
yeah.
He's immediately dead. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He sends Anna off, and then it chases Arnold, forcing Arnold to kind of jump off, like, a tiny waterfall into the river.
That was a huge fall, Paige. That was
what are you talking about? He fell down and over a waterfall.
Well, that's after this, though. So he jumps, like, this little mini cliff into the river. And then in the river, he then goes down like two waterfalls.
Yeah.
And what we find out is that the Predator followed him. And when Arnold climbs out of the river, he's covered in mud. And the Predator walks towards him uncloaked and clearly can't see him.
Right.
And this is when Arnold figures out that he can't see him if he's not warm.
Right.
And so the Predator instead shoots at a possum and then runs away.
And also misses.
Yeah.
Which I was like, how did this possum survive this?
So this is where we start to see a montage of Arnold basically setting up booby traps where he's got like sharp sticks and knives on branches, a thing that he can like a giant log he can crush with, basically an obstacle course.
Yeah, it's a trap building montage here.
We cut to Predator dropping Billy's body. And then it reaches into it and pulls out the spine.
Yeah.
Because all the Predator really wants is a skull. It collects skulls.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
It is very insane and cool. Yes.
Him and Andrea Gazzetta both love a good skull. Arnold, at this point, makes a bow and arrow, but he also makes a bunch of, like, leaf grenades.
Yes. Okay, so he takes apart his grenades that you would shoot out of your gun. To make those leaf grenades.
Yeah. Basically just filling them with gunpowder so he can, like, light them.
Right.
Now we cut back to Predator, who's, like, stroking one of the skulls.
I mean, he's just, like, admiring his trophies. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you do.
And then we cut back to Arnold, who lights up a torch and then just just screams into the night. And it's the coolest shit ever.
It's so good.
He's signaling that the final round of American Gladiators is about to begin.
Yep. And as a response, the Predator heats up his Wolverine claw.
Yes. With the lasers. Yeah.
So Arnold waits. The Predator comes out of the trees. It's right behind him and it climbs over him because of the mud. He can't see
him. I know. I thought that was insane. I was like, are they about to touch? And then Arnold Schwarzenegger Tarzans to a different tree.
Yes.
Yes. And it's right into Arnold's trap because he had explosives and a fire set up.
Yeah.
And it basically stuns the Predator. It disables the cloaking.
Yeah.
And Predator files wire like everywhere, just wildly, and doesn't hit Arnold.
Like the people from earlier.
Yep.
Yeah. So then Arnold falls out of a tree, but stays hidden under a log where he grabs essentially like a spear. He throws a rock as a distraction and then throws the spear and connects. and then follows the blood of the wounded predator.
Yeah. Is this the one that's like the explosive spear?
Yeah. Yes. Oh. Yeah. The hunter has become the hunted.
It was so cool, though. He had like this explosive javelin spear.
Yes. It's great.
I wish I could make cool shit like this.
Right. Mm. He follows the blood into a cave, but now the predator's right behind him, in part because as he's been running around, now I think the predator can kind of see him a little bit better.
I think he's triangulating his position based upon where the sounds are coming from. Because we see him sort of do that with when he throws the rock.
Right.
So I think at this point, that's the only way he could sort of guess as to where Dutch is because he's triangulating the sound.
Right.
Once Dutch later, you know, loses the mud, then he can totally see him. But right now, I think that's the only way he can find him.
So then he lights a leaf grenade, which explodes, and they're both out of the cave now. He ends up in the water, which washes off all the mud, so now he can kind of be seen a little bit. And Predator pulls out his Wolverine claws, and he wants that skull. He's like looking for the skull. He wants it.
But the blades literally go on either side of his neck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's insane.
Well, because now he thinks of him as an equal. He's like, we're going to have a fair fight.
Oh. Yes. So it steps back and takes the mask off for some of the best movie makeup of the 80s.
Yeah, I think so, too. It looks very, very good for the 80s.
Yes.
And what I wanted was this to be the Keith David, Rowdy Roddy Piper from They Live fight scene. I wanted it to just be like a shot for shot that fight for like 10 minutes. It would have been awesome.
Of just like slow punching.
Yeah.
But I mean, he strips off the gun. He strips off all the technology. He just has the knives. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. And Arnold just says, you're one ugly motherfucker.
And he's right.
Which is so great.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is at this point in the movie, it is 10 minutes before the end of the movie. And this is the only time we see the Predator's face. And it has one lazy eye. But then it screams with its very vaginal mouth.
They're mandibles.
Mandibles.
Looks a lot like a pussy. And Arnold tries to punch him, and then the Predator basically just bitch slaps him across the pond. And they just literally get into a fist fight, and the Predator beats the shit out of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. Like kicking his ass.
It's so good.
Until he crawls back towards his booby traps. And he, like, double crosses the Predator, where the Predator discovers the one trap.
I love this.
Clearly, this is what Arnold Schwarzenegger planned for, was to plant what looked like an obvious trap and then have a more secret trap.
Yes.
So it walks around to the other side, which is exactly what Arnold wanted.
Yeah,
and he smashes him with a log. But the Predator is still alive.
Yeah, he's not dead.
Well, I like this. Arnold picks up a rock to kill him, but then stops because he wants him to suffer, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, oh, I guess he's just going to let him die here slowly.
So here's what's interesting. Arnold says, who the hell are you, or what are you?
Yeah.
And the Predator kind of echoes it back.
What are you?
And then starts to human laugh, which is insane.
And sets its bracelet to self-destruct.
Yeah.
Here's my big pet peeve of this movie is that self-destruct countdown's really fast, and Arnold Schwarzenegger must have been running like the Flash.
Yeah, well, and the blast nearly grounds the helicopter, but Arnold doesn't die in the blast. Like, he makes it to the helicopter.
That Arnold gets picked up by the helicopter, and the movie ends with him just being, like, super traumatized staring off into space. And the general
also, how did the girl get in the helicopter? She's in there with
him. The helicopter already took off. And then they saw the explosion and went over there. But, like, it's a day later, so I don't really know.
Yeah.
To be honest, I think the girl made it to the helicopter the day before and then took the helicopter back to where they were to get him. That makes a lot more sense in my head canon.
I would never do that.
I would never do that either.
Yeah, I would have gotten on the chopper and been like, he's dead. All your men are dead. I'll tell you whatever you want. Please keep me safe.
Yeah.
There was a giant alien. It killed everyone. I will tell you everything you need to know about communism, the gorillas, anything. Take me to America, please.
I like how the first one was communism. So you've seen the movie. We've talked about the movie. What did you guys think? Let's do some final thoughts.
I love this movie.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Mikey, what do you think?
It holds up.
I mean, this movie, Paige is right. It holds up. It's super entertaining. There's some problematic things from the 80s that don't go well. But I think it definitely like takes a twist on like, because you have to put it at the time, there were a ton of action movies that are like Schwarzenegger's Commando. He like makes one-liners, does all this stuff. And
yeah.
It's like super over-the-top action. And then this movie kind of like you said, Days of Left Turn, it's like half of that movie, and then it's hunting people who are like starring in those movies, and those people get scared. So I think it really holds up. I really like it.
What you just said, Mikey, is exactly why I think this movie is awesome. It like takes that machismo sort of douchebaggy, like macho dude image, and then what would scare that guy? And then the second half of the movie. And I really thought that was a cool way of amping it up. I don't think it's a great movie. Like, there are problematic things in it. But, man, for the 80s, this is a good, solid movie. I understand why this is, like, one of those movies that people still talk about. Yeah. All right. Do you have some fun facts for us, Paige?
We have so many fun facts for you.
It's fun facts.
Let's get into it.
All right.
The original script for this movie was slipped under a door at the studio.
What?
And then was extensively rewritten. So the original script was called Hunter.
Oh.
And the screenwriter had a severe back injury and basically wrote the entire script while lying on a beach high on painkillers and based it effectively on The Most Dangerous Game. So it was kind of a bare bones script. And then the reason Arnold got involved and was part of most of the rewrites is essentially, do you want to share your fun fact, Mikey?
Oh, yeah. This all started because they were all talking about, like, what's Rocky going to fight next, an alien? That's like, this is how the whole movie starts.
And yes. And so they basically are like, what's Rocky going to fight next, an alien? This script gets passed under a door and they're like, perfect.
But yes, this is what we need.
No one tells Stallone.
Yeah.
Because we don't want him in the movie.
Shane Black, who's in this movie, directed the most recent Predator adaptation, which is really interesting, and went on to direct a ton of other action movies, is basically the king of modern action movie.
Yeah.
When he was cast in Predator, he had already written Lethal Weapon, which hadn't been made yet, but he'd already written it. And they cast him because they wanted him to do a rewrite of the Predator script.
That's insane.
But he wanted to be an actor, so they put him in the movie. And when they got down to Mexico to shoot, they were like, could you just like do like a quick rewrite for us, please? And he was like, no, because you hired me as an actor and not for a writer. If you want me to do that, you have to pay me as a writer.
Right.
And so they killed him first in the movie. They did a rewrite to kill him first.
Really?
And yes. And in that rewrite, he was killed 7 minutes into the movie. I think that's based on, that's the original rewrite. In the actual, the end product of the movie, he gets killed closer to like 30 minutes in.
Yeah.
Because they went and did extensive reshoots very, very late in production, which pushed the timeline on that.
Right.
They had to bring in a military consultant because most of the cast had bulked up, but it was vanity muscles. And so they couldn't actually keep up with the cardio of the real scenarios in the movie. And none of them knew how to hold their guns, except for Jesse Ventura, because he'd been in Vietnam, except his gun is fake. So he didn't even know how to hold that gun. Because most of the guns in this movie, a handful of them are real, but most of the guns are adapted. They're different, they're like pieces of different guns put together. They add bandoliers to small guns that take magazines. The most glaring one is the Gatling gun, which would have, you know, basically been a whole extra person's worth of weight to carry, including the bullets. All of that made it worse because they filmed in Mexico in the hottest part of the summer, but they didn't do enough research about the tropical rainforest where they were going to be filming. And so the forest where they were filming looked more like just a regular forest and not like a lush green tropical forest.
Right.
Hence why there's skunks and possums in this movie, because those are not rainforest animals. But we see both of those in this film. So they had to start a nursery, and they would bring in fake plants as old ones would die, because they were bringing in plants native to rainforests that could not survive in the hot, arid climate where they were filming.
Oh my God.
So they were just constantly like shifting plants in and out. But that's not even the worst part. When they first arrived in Mexico, there was a crime syndicate controlling all of the film unions in Mexico.
Oh my God.
And so they had a Mexican crew, and they weren't allowed to bring Americans to work on films. So they reached kind of like an understanding where they would bring in a crew from Australia because the crime syndicate crew didn't actually know what they were doing. They like were ruining equipment. They like exploded a light because they weren't an actual film crew. They were just whoever the crime syndicate sent you. And so they had to fly people out from Australia the next day. So they were calling people like, are you working tomorrow? Get on a plane now. Yeah.
From Australia to Mexico. That's a long flight.
Yep. They also didn't account for the fact that they were shooting in a real jungle. It didn't look the way they expected it to look, but it was a real jungle. So the actors were constantly crawling through those plants and they kept encountering snakes, spiders, and the occasional scorpion.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Because, and this is why there are scorpions, because it is a more arid climate, which means that scorpions would survive as opposed to a true tropical rainforest.
Right.
That's why there are scorpions in this movie. I do have some stories about who was fun to work with and who wasn't, and then we'll save our most famous almost casting story for the last one.
Okay, yes. Cool. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and there's one, there was an original Predator suit that looked like a bug. It looked like a giant ant.
I'll get to that one when we get to JCVD, because he was actually supposed to be in that suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people said that Jesse Ventura was super fun to work with, and he would travel occasionally on weekends back to America to wrestle while he was filming this movie.
Really?
Yes. And then he would come back. So he said, one of them said that he came back and said, how did it go? And then he said, I won. And they said, well, it was your turn, wasn't it? Because wrestling's fake.
Right.
And Jesse Ventura got outraged, picked that guy up, lifted him above his head, and then put him back down afterward. And but the guy says, I didn't argue with him anymore about wrestling.
That is a power move. I mean, I wouldn't argue with him either. Funny fact, though, that's actually how he won the gubernatorial debates for Wisconsin.
He just lifted his opponent?
He just lifted his opponent over his head and put him down, yeah.
Well, that was, so I don't know if you are familiar with the film No Holds Barred starring Hulk Hogan.
I am.
Yes.
But if you listen to the How Did This Get Made episode on No Holds Barred, people tell stories about Hulk Hogan where, like, he just walked into a restaurant and lifted a small Asian man above his head.
Yeah.
And then asked someone if he had any of that sweet weed, brother, which is so great. So this might be why we're missing the knife fight between Billy and the Predator.
Okay.
That feels like it should be there.
There definitely should be something there.
He should have a death on screen and he doesn't.
Right.
The problem was the actor, Sonny Landham, that played Billy seemed to have a bit of an alcohol problem.
Oh, okay.
To the point where he didn't really get along with the rest of the cast because they broed out this entire movie. They would all work out together.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They would all go out together at night. They would go to restaurants. They would hang out on the beach. They were like a real crew, a team. And he was kind of the outlier. And so one night they were out and someone said, look over there. And Sonny, the actor, was on the floor crawling around and licking women's legs.
What?
And so security was called to escort him out of the club. So I think they just didn't like him. And either they cut a scene that they shot or it got to a point because this movie ran way over its allotted budget and time.
Yeah.
I think that might have been one of those things that they were just like, screw it, send him home early because he was such a problem.
Right,
on set.
Right.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Okay. So the Thermoview, the like heat vision, was actually shot in heat vision, but they had to like have something showing heat vision and then a camera shooting that thing because there was no camera to directly shoot in heat vision at the time.
Okay, yeah.
But it looked terrible and you couldn't really see anything. So the footage was actually reshot multiple times and it ended up being edited in post. But for all of what they tried to do, it would have cost them so much less to just fake it in post.
Really?
Even with the effects at the time.
Wow.
So they spent so much money trying to get it to look good and it still looks bad. And personally, and this is just headcanon, I think if you removed all of the thermo view, this movie still holds up and it's amazing and scary.
Yeah.
And it actually is scarier, I would say, without it.
I think so too.
All right. Let's get into the most famous movie fact about this. So a few things before we get into this. Number one, everyone agrees that Jean-Claude Van Damme was originally cast as The Predator.
I mean, I had heard that before.
Yeah.
However, there are as many different stories as you can think of as to why he was removed from the production. There's rumors that he was pulled because Jean-Claude Van Damme is only 5'6", give or take, and so they didn't think he was big enough to be scary.
Right.
There were rumors that he was being a diva and he didn't get along with the rest of the cast. Mm-hmm. There were rumors that the suit that they originally had him wear for filming was red felt, and it was 90 degrees with 100%, give or take, humidity.
Right.
And so he kept passing out.
Oh,
was another rumor. And they basically were like, we can't, you, it's causing so many production delays. We can't have you continue to pass out. Whatever it is, he was fired. No one really knows why. But if you go to the oral history in that Hollywood Reporter article, they list all the stories of him being fired that they were able to find. And it's like five different ones.
That's awesome. When they fired him, they redid the suit.
Yes.
The first suit looks terrible.
Yeah. He was fitted for the original suit, which looked completely different, was kind of praying mantis-y. It looks like a bug.
Yeah.
Kind of. But it required extensive puppeteer work. And once they started shooting with it, it was impossible to make it jump between the trees and move the way that the movie required the monster to move. And that monster is actually, they didn't really give them enough time to build it, is kind of what happened with that original monster. Because one of the guys working on that monster also worked on The Thing. And so had he had time to like fully conceive what he wanted, it would have been amazing. And I believe, if memory serves, some of the crew working on the original Predator suit left in pre-production to work on American Werewolf in London.
Ah, okay. And that transformation scene holds up, man.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
And so when we look at those two movies where the effects are amazing and super effective practical effects, even now, I think that's what we end up missing out on because of the production schedule of this movie and people just not really understanding the value of giving those people the time to work. Regardless, they didn't like what they currently had as this monster, and the studio was getting real picky about the budget, and so the studio suspended production on this movie. This movie almost didn't happen. They had filmed half of it. They were 48 days into a 56-day shoot, and they had only managed to film half of the film at this point.
Oh, wow.
So they had filmed everything without the monster. Half of this movie was made, and they didn't fully know what the monster was.
That's crazy.
Which is wild. So they suspended production. But Arnold really wanted this movie to get made, so he reached out to Stan Winston, who had worked on Terminator, and literally right as he was working on this movie, wins an Oscar for Aliens,
mm-hmm.
and he basically presents a new character and art design model to the head of production at Fox, basically to allow everyone to return to Mexico and complete the film. So without him presenting that new monster, the movie doesn't get made. And so that's how we ended up with the monster that we have. And those are the fun facts. I know that's nice. a lot more than normal, but this is a movie that has such interesting backstory.
That's amazing. Well, thank you for your fun facts with a special assist from listener Kate. Thank you guys so much.
Yes, thank you.
Let's do some box office, guys. Let's talk about this.
I know because of what I did fun facts. So
sure. I don't know. So I'll guess.
So Mikey, what do you think the production budget was for Predator?
$12 million?
You're actually pretty close, Mikey. It's $18 million.
Okay.
Which, considering what they pull off in this movie, is amazing.
It sort of is, yeah.
That's a low budget for how much is in this movie. How many like helicopters and explosions, practical effects, and the amount of CG that they would have had to put in post-production to make this movie happen.
Right.
So this movie came out on June 12th, 1987. And it was, I'll go ahead and give this to you, Mikey. It was number one in the theaters the weekend it came out.
Hell yeah.
How much do you think it made in its opening weekend domestically?
$10 million.
You're close. It was $12 million.
All right.
It beat The Witches of Eastwick, which was also new to theaters that week. Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Oh, that's a good one.
The Untouchables and The Believers. That was the top five that week. And Predator continued to do very well at the box office. And it ended up making $59.7 million domestically and $38.5 million internationally. So it made $98.2 million at the box office.
Yeah, so this was a mega hit.
Yeah, it made a lot of money. I don't have domestic DVD and Blu-ray sales like I do sometimes, but I'm sure it made a ton of money off that as well.
I mean, it's had how many sequels? This is like, this movie is a cemented classic. I'm sure it's made hundreds of millions of dollars in DVD sales in the 30 years since it came out.
I'm sure that's true. But that is box office.
All right.
Maybe, Mikey, we should hit him with that scary scale.
Let's do the scary scale. So scary scare, listeners, is a scale from 1 to 10 about how scary you found the film at the time of viewing.
Right.
Not a scale of quality of the film.
But how scared we were when we saw it. Our number one example is Ghostbusters.
And our number 10 example is Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
Or Arachnophobia.
If you're Mikey, yeah.
Yeah, if you're me.
Yeah.
Paige, what are you going to give it?
You know what? I'm going to give this about a 3. I will say the first time I saw this as a child,
right,
it would have been like a 7 or 8, where like, but I think nostalgia helps me out on this one.
Sure.
I did have some jump scares though, where like with the initial skinned bodies and the net, and it is a tense movie, but I just love it. So yeah. I would give it like a 3.
Yeah, for me, I'm gonna give it a 2. I would say the bodies that you see skinned really got to me, and the jump scare of when Arnold Schwarzenegger has the Predator creep up behind him and the trap springs, that really got me too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not really, really scary. Like, I do think a horror version could watch this and be fine. It is a lot more action than horror, but it definitely has a lot of horror elements to it.
8-year-old Paige was able to watch this and be fine.
I feel personally attacked right now.
I'm going to go ahead and give it a 1 because I've watched it a lot and I'm dead inside.
Yeah, that makes sense. What about when you first saw it, Mikey? What would you give it when you first saw it as a kid?
Probably like a 5 or a 4.
Okay,
I thought it was so cool. The cool factor overcame the scare factor.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely get that. Yeah. Oh, so this week you guys made me watch Predator. What are you guys making me watch next week?
Next week, we're watching The Omen. And this is the original Omen.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The last time I saw this movie was when I was at a sleepover as a child, and this is one of those movies that made me never want to watch horror. This is one of those two movies.
And you know what? I think that it doesn't hold up as being as scary as you remember, and I think this might cure you of that a little bit.
I think I was 8 or 9 at the time. I was very young, but this really scared me when I was a kid.
Yeah, and it's scary for an 8 or 9-year-old.
Sure.
I think you're going to be a lot less scared of it now. We'll see.
I mean, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see next week. So guys, your homework for next week is to watch the original Omen. So check that out and see if it still scares you as much as it scared 8-year-old Todd.
And I've got a lot of fun facts on that one. It's one of a handful of movies that are considered to be actually cursed.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, all right. Well, guys, we'll see if that curse continues next week. So, Mikey, do you have a review for us to read?
Yeah, I'm reading some.
While you're looking for a review for us to read, Mikey, let me tell them how they can have their review read on the podcast. And that is simply to leave us a 5-star review on Apple iTunes. And, you know, give us a little text review. Let Mikey have a little fun with it. And we'll read it on the podcast. So, Mikey, do you have a review for us to read?
Steve1236, he writes, love this podcast.
Aww,
oh, nice.
Thanks.
It's a short review,
but this is my gift to Paige. Just want to say, love this podcast and look forward to future episodes. Love the addition of Paige. She fits in so seamlessly.
Oh, thank you.
That's so sweet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, awesome. Well, Paige, welcome to the podcast. And Steve, thank you so much for leaving that awesome 5-star review.
Paige got such a good reception. I'm like jealous and kind of want Paige off the podcast.
You're going to have to kill me first, bitch.
Well, that apparently is how it goes.
Wouldn't be my first time, Paige.
I will Carol Baskin you.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, yeah, guys, if you want to have your review run on the podcast, leave us that 5-star review. We are a member of the Consequence Podcast Network, so if you'd like, check out all of their stuff at consequenceofsound.net. And if you want to go to our website, you can by going to horrorvirgin.com, where you can see links to the merch store and some other great stuff up there. And if you want to follow us on social, we are at Horror Virgin. you want to follow us all individually, Paige is at Paige Wesley on Twitter and at Rampage Wesley on Instagram. And
that's correct. TikTok everything else.
And everything else.
And Instagram and TikTok. And mm-hmm.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. And Mikey is at mrandolph24 everywhere. I am at Todd J. Awesome. And if you'd like, you should check out our other podcast, Romancing the Podcast.
Yes.
That is a lot like The Horror Virgin, but for romantic movies.
It came out
awesome.
This past Thursday, and you've got tons of episodes up to stream. So we're not just starting you out with one. You've got
five
tons of stuff
to
listen
binge.
To.
Yeah.
It's my love child.
Oh my God, it's so good. I'm so happy with it, guys. So yeah. Oh, and if you want to help financially support this show, please do by going to patreon.com/horrorvirgin, where we literally have hours and hours and hours of bonus content that you can sign up for. And if you can't help financially support the show, but you still want your daily free content, check out our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/horrorvirgin. Or if you don't want to remember all that URL, just, look at our socials. We link it like once a week.
That's going to be it from us, guys. I'm Paige.
I'm Mikey.
And I'm your horror virgin, Todd, guys.
Paige, you say something, and then I say something.
Oh, right, because this is the catchphrase that I don't have.
Yeah. Have a great week.
If you bleed, we can kill you.
Mikey! Bye.
Have a wonderful, fantastic week, my friends.
Arnold Nerds, this episode brought to you by
Nick B.
Fun fact for Nick B.
Yeah?
Yeah, he hunts orangutans for sport.
What?
In the deep jungles of Mexico.
Aw.
Aren't they endangered species?
They are now.
Okay.
Hunting them.
All right.
Well, Nick B.
Stop.
Yeah, maybe don't do that, Nick B. But I mean, I get it. It's like the closest thing you can get to hunting the most dangerous game, which is Mikey.
Yeah.
Now all I can hear in my head is the ooh, ooh, ooh. I want to be like you. Ooh, ooh,
I want to walk like you,
talk like you do. And then Nick B swinging in and shooting that monkey in the face. This episode also brought to you by Ori.
Ori.
And Ori, even though she brought me to the jungle under false pretenses to get me to go on this mission with her, she still went with me and ended up sacrificing herself to make sure that we made it back to the chopper.
Is Ori Carl Weathers?
I cannot confirm nor deny that she is Carl Weathers.
What?
But Ori, thank you so much for being willing to go with us on this super secret mission. This episode also brought to you by Mads.
Orca de Borca.
I like how you add the duh in the middle of it. Orca de
Borca.
Mads is from Sweden and he wants us to give you some Swedish fun facts. So here is my Swedish fun fact. Do you guys know the 3-point seatbelt system that is literally over your shoulder and across your waist and kind of connects at the side? Pretty much.
It's been crushing my boobs for decades. Yes.
Right. So this thing that has been crushing your boobs for decades, it was developed in Sweden. It's called the Swedish 3-point seatbelt system. It's claimed to have saved more than 1 million lives or 2 million boobs. It was launched by Volvo in 1959 and is found in over a billion vehicles worldwide.
We have a billion vehicles? That's crazy.
I mean, we don't. The world does.
I mean, I said we like we're the world.
Oh, yeah. We are the
we
world.
We are the world.
We are the Volvos. We are the seatbelts that hold your boobs back and protect them. I don't know what I'm saying. All right. So, Matt, thank you and your brethren and sisterin, is that how you say it, in Sweden for helping keep over a million people alive. That's
Yay.
Awesome. Yeah. We now return you to another episode of
The Patrioticals.
We're now, everyone wakes up and they're in the Bahamas.
Right.
Yeah, Karoon's there and he's like, oh shit, I've been fired from my network job, intergalactic network job.
Not IGTN, no!
Yeah, this episode, Matthew catches Karoon up to the events of the Earth and then like, of the Sunny D virus, the zombie plague, the robots, the Illuminati, and Karoon's like, this place fucking blows. He's like, I want out of here immediately. So they're doing that and they're walking around. Eddie and Isaac and Matthew are together, and Matthew's like, look, I feel that there is a sunken Illuminati submarine around the Bahamas. We need to go get it. And Tristram, he's partially robot. He like hacks into a computer on a giant yacht to control it.
Yeah, like a computer boat. I gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
Like GPS.
A rowboat, if you will, instead of a robot.
Yeah.
I also think
Mikey fundamentally does not understand what GPS is. Like a computer on a boat. Like, you know, GPS.
It's like a Tesla on a boat.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry that this is the part of the Patreonicals you want to argue about. So Tristram and this boat are now they're a relationship.
I'm sorry, what?
Because he's half robot and the boat is half robot. And so they're like, we bond over shared trauma.
So he's literally in a relationship?
Yeah, well.
Nailed it.
But he can't walk around and stuff while he drives the boat because they have to be physically connected.
Ooh, codependent.
they call it anxious attachment, Paige.
Eddie, who can talk to mammals, has a bunch of dolphins around the boat to protect it. And they're using their echolocation to find the submarine.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Isaac, he just goes crab fishing and eats a bunch of crabs because he was hungry. He doesn't really have much to do this. He doesn't have much to do this episode, but it was really annoying to Eddie because he could hear the screams of the crabs.
Oh,
because he could talk to animals.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Kate used her mind powers to put a mini sub on the relationship to get ready to find the submarine.
I'm sorry. I just love that we're calling the boat that is dating Tristram the relationship. I love that.
Instead
so
of calling
much.
It the love boat.
I love it.
Soon
yeah.
we'll be making another ride. Yeah.
So they are setting sail to find the crashed Illuminati submarine to get answers about how to stop it. Because the Illuminati is currently conquering the whole Earth with their robot army.
Are those the electronics you forgot the last couple weeks? The robot.
I brought him back. I brought everything back the last episode.
Ah, okay.
What are the odds that Karun thinks that Matthew just made up the story of the Patrioticals off the top of his head? What if the submarine is flying around, not underwater, so the dolphins aren't able to find it? Or did Mikey just forget he could make it fly? Find out next week on another episode of
The Patrioticals. I think it's really, really funny when Mikey is like, how dare you? The content of my story is something other than what you've said. And I'm like, how do you remember? I don't know.
Consequence Podcast Network.